Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Jenny Bill, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
It's the same bridge. Nothing has changed. I know that. I also know it's wrong. Perception of linear time? Extra perception of linear time. Maybe it's time for another Resonance Rewind into the days of yesterday's Enterprise. Duality, that's the name of what we've just been listening to, and Duality is at the heart of yesterday's Enterprise, directed, of course, by David Carson. And the time where, according to most Trek scholars, over 3 decades ago, of course, 33 years since it first had its air in 1990, or its air date, suddenly the Next Generation found its feet as a genuine incarnation of Star Trek, as opposed to perhaps trying to find its way under Gene Roddenberry. Let's turn straight away to Jessica Burtis. Jessica, your thoughts on yesterday's Enterprise?
I think it was definitely one of the more heavier, more intense Star Trek episodes that I've watched, with how much catastrophe could have happened. And I think it continues with our theme recently of time travel, but I think that this was interesting with the alternate reality kind of that ended up happening. And I think the concept of there being one person who like remembers this alternate reality is always an interesting concept whenever there's shows that deal with that and alternate timelines. I think it was also interesting getting to see a different angle of Picard, because I don't know if I've seen him like nervous and this kind of worried, having to admit that, you know, the war is not going well for the Federation. I think that that was interesting because I'm still getting to know his character since I'm still getting into Star Trek. I thought it was actually really interesting. I think the plot had sounded like when I heard the brief description of it that it was going to be a lot like it wasn't going to be as involved as it was with as many people who I got attached to as quickly as I did, but I really enjoyed it.
Moves along at a cracking pace, and it's interesting that you mentioned the dark nature of it. There's a distinctive difference between the two enterprises that we see as indeed Larry Nemechek writes in, of course, the go-to Bible for the next generation companion, a living ghost from the past, the Enterprise NCC 1701C, lost with all hands 22 years ago, emerges from a temporal rift. Strange how 22 years ago would take us back to 2001, really. It's a strange and bizarre time. Larry is with us. Good news from that point of view. Welcome, Larry, as ever, a Trek scholar extraordinaire. Let's turn to Cathy Manso, though. Cathy, your thoughts on yesterday's Enterprise. Had you seen it before, or was it a case of rather like Jessica, this was a first time for you?
This was the first time for me, and man, it got me in 44 minutes. I was by myself watching it, and moments would happen, and I would react out loud saying, "Damn, they did her dirty." I was just having these really inward moments with the show, and just a great cast. I was immediately excited to see Whoopi Goldberg. It's an instant. I was like, "Great, awesome! I'm glad we're going into this." I have a lot of compliments for the show. So I really was invested, really enjoyed it.
I need more.
There is no more. I wish there were. I wish I could prove it, but I can't.
Then I can't ask them to go back.
You've got to.
Guinan, they will die moments after they return. How can I ask them to sacrifice themselves based solely on your intuition?
I don't know. But I do know that this is a mistake. Every fiber in my being says this is a mistake. I can't explain it to myself, so I can't explain it to you. I only know that I'm right.
Who is to say that this history is any less proper than the other?
I suppose I am.
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough! I will not ask them to die.
40 billion people have already died. This war is not supposed to be happening. You've got to send those people back to correct this.
And what is the guarantee that if they go back, they will succeed? Every instinct is telling me this is wrong, it is dangerous, it is futile.
We've known each other a long time. You have never known me to impose myself on anyone. Or take a stance based on trivial or whimsical perceptions. This timeline must not be allowed to continue. Now, I've told you what you must do. You have only your trust in me to help you decide to do it.
Deflector shield technology has advanced considerably during the war. Our heat dissipation rates are probably double those of the Enterprise C, which means we can hang in a firefight a lot longer.
Well, there we are. Positive views from the first timers, Larry. I mean, this was an episode, as I said in the introduction, where it seemed as though the Next Generation was beginning to develop its own format, its own style. Again, you wrote for it. You wrote extensively about the episode and so on. It was it aired the week of February the 19th, 1990, directed by David Carson, as we mentioned. A story, interesting combination of Trent Christopher Ganino and Eric A. Stillwell, with a teleplay by Iris Stephen Burr, the late Iris Stephen Burr, of course, Richard Manning, Heinz Beimler, and Ronald D. Moore. So, Larry, over to you. I mean, can you recall 22, well, 33 years ago, basically, how you kind of first encountered yesterday's Enterprise?
I have a very clear memory of that, but first I want to just correct something. You said Iris Stephen Bear no longer with us. Iris very much with us. I think you're thinking of Michael Piller.
You're quite right, actually.
Okay,
You see, that's why you're the Trek scholar, exactly.
so
That's
Iris' grandmother isn't. No, I'm kidding.
fantastic.
Alarmed. No, well, just as a fan sitting at home watching this before I was involved with the franchise at all, I have a very clear memory of this. because watching this, because I was blown away too. It was so, I always love hearing first time viewers' opinions and things. So I thank you, Jessica and Kathy. That was awesome. It just kind of verifies what people get. Like it verify, you know, it validates what people went through, and it validates what I did, because the first time, and I had been a watcher all along. I was watching week to week Next Generation and had been a rerun kid with the other things, saw the movies coming out as they came out. But when this did, and you watch Star Trek out of a sense of loyalty, and there were a lot of issues in the first couple of seasons and bright spots and all that, but you were always cheering for it, right? And there was no other Star Trek, so your focus was all here. But when this episode aired, and I did not yet know about all the drama going on behind the scenes, all I could do was read the credits every week and try to, you know, read the tea leaves from the tea credits, I guess. But by the time this one ended, I was like, wow. My clearest thought was, wow, they have finally managed to match the power and even the scope of the original series movies in a Next Generation hour. That an hour of TV is finally able to match the power and the impact of an original series movie with all that they could do in a movie. And I was like, well, they're in good, if they can do this, then, you know, the sky's the limit. And I just remember being blown away by how powerful it was, and the questions and the scenario and all the, just how your brain was opened to so many possibilities by then, and had, you know, and having Tasha back and what they did with Guinan as a person who could see multi dimensions, because she had been an enigma and they didn't really know what they wanted to do with her. They just wanted to, you know, it was like a joke that Guinan was mysterious at this point. And it wouldn't be until The Generations, the movie, you know, 4 or 5 years later, that they would start tying down exactly some of the tie downs of Guinan. But at this point, just to her, in her second season, they were still kind of saying, oh, she's just mysterious this way. And she's just, and we don't know about her back. She says this vague thing to Picard here. And, you know, we don't know what that means. So, yeah. But no, this is the time when I went, this show has made it.
And it's interesting, of course, referring to the character of Guinan, that there's only Data who actually raises that notion that her species has perception that goes beyond linear time. This was long before we introduced the prophets and the non-linear time and the concept of non-linear time and so on. I think a very bold, no pun intended, decision to actually work through that, which apparently Eric Stilwell basically says the writing staff didn't think the show would work because its teleplay was written by committee and rushed to final draft in 3 days, 3 days to actually meet the schedule.
Well, what the story, and yes, this is to be a landmark show that affected so many people and still is affecting people and making a mark, leaving a mark. The way it began, this is like never judge a book by its process cover, I guess, because this had been a pitch that came in. They wanted to do it. Trent's part was, the Enterprise C comes forward in time and Picard has to wrestle with the fact, do I tell them that they're doomed or not? And it was a crisis of conscience for Picard. And then Eric's pitch was a time traveling story that it's kind of a throwback to the Guardian of Forever. And they were itching to start doing, you know, to get over the whole Next Generation must stand on its own. We can't use anything from the original series because it has to have its own identity. This cannot be a pale sequel series that's constantly going back and borrowing tropes and characters and all. But by the third season, they were starting to feel that, at least it was trickling up. And Eric worked on staff. Trent was an outsider, but Eric was a PA, and he was, by this time, he was the script coordinator. He was the job that Lolita Faggio would have later and other people down the line. But he had pitched a story with Sarek, where Sarek, something had happened in the past to the Guardian of Forever, and that Sarek was caught up in it, and Surok, the original Vulcan founder of Logic, something happened to him, and Sarek had to go back and take his place, much the same way Ben Sisko takes the place of Gabriel Bell in the Bell Rides, to make history play out right. And Sarek is captured as a spy when he comes for. Anyway, it's a whole convoluted, really cool plot, but at the time, nobody wanted to touch Vulcans and Sarek and all of that, which is amazing because just a half a season later they would, which is showing you how fast things are evolving. But no, at this time they came up with this show and then they developed it. But what happened was whenever they did a Guinan story or not, it all depended on Whoopi Goldberg's schedule. It reminds me a lot of the way they talk about Michelle Yeoh's schedule now when they're trying to talk about a Section 31 future. But at the time, everything depended on when Whoopi had holes in her schedule because she loved doing it. And they only needed two or three actual days, right, for her part, depending on how large it was. But this was going to be a major Guinan episode. And at the last second, her schedule shifted so that they had to bump this up a slot. This was supposed to be transfixed with the show that comes after. So that's why they got into the dits about writing. And that's why they had to hone it down and get it. And that's why not only did they have to throw it together in 3 days, they had to do it over the American Thanksgiving weekend. So all the writers had to give up their Thanksgiving holiday to write, and they all just took an act and wrote it. And it's a five-act show. There's four names on the teleplay. But Michael, speaking of Michael Piller, who was the head writer, showrunner, he took an act, and then the other four, you know, Ira and Ron, they all took an act, and Michael did too. But because you could only list four names in a credit at that time under the Writers Guild rules, Michael was the showrunner. He took his name off. But basically, they all worked over the weekend and met over the weekend, like on the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, came together, threw their acts together, and then Michael did a polish, and then it was off to the races. But because of that, and because it wasn't a time and again yet, but it was still confusing, and a lot of people thought, oh, this is just a hopeless mess. We're never going to understand this. Nobody will ever, you know, get it. So it was part of the third season comeback, but it was the one that went through the biggest hell to get made. And so the fact that it turned out to be the biggest thing, maybe a lot of people debated whether this or Best of Both Worlds was the best Next Generation episode.
Well, it is interesting you mentioned that, Larry.
It's an amazing saga, yeah.
And I'll come back to this for another time because we're focusing this edition of Resonance Rewind on yesterday's Enterprise. But for me, emotional impact, both then and now, my vote would actually go for The Offspring, the next episode that actually follows, which again I think just emotionally packs a huge wallop. This one I thought was important, but it was again another interesting side of things. Jessica, having heard some of the backstory, the production things there, and obviously you need never talk about deadlines, doing your master's degree or writing deadlines again, really, on the basis of kind of how we used to with typewriters, no doubt, not word processors, probably typewriters were in use of that side of things there. So, Jessica, does that kind of enhance your appreciation of the show? Do you just think, wow, how did they do that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because even if someone is not someone who watches Star Trek or is really like involved in the fandom, I feel like you still know Picard and the Next Generation. And these are very established things within Star Trek and they're considered very important. So I feel like it's so interesting hearing how Larry was explaining that this is really the episode that set this show. And I think that that's interesting because for me, I already view this show as being super important to Star Trek. So it's really interesting that the viewpoints have kind of shifted. Like as someone coming into it, I kind of expected it to be a good episode because it's Picard and it's the Next Generation. So it's very interesting to hear that.
Well, as I say,
well, that's the benefit of hindsight, see, but when you're now, just imagine someone watching A Strange New World, you know, or a Discovery now, and you don't know what it's going to bring. And some weeks it's not such a great show. And then the one time when you get a wow factor out of a show, you remember it. And then, yeah, 20 years later, 30 years later, well, of course, we knew that was going to be. It's like, but at the time, you don't. And
yeah.
It was just a very vivid. And, you know, and as the years went by, they all, so many of the series now blend together and they do stack up. And there is this kind of compression of impression. Ooh, is that a phrase?
Right.
But yeah, that's why at the moment when there was nothing else, yeah, that's why. But it's interesting. Both of you had a really effective impression of it. So that shows that it stands the test of time, I think. Yeah.
Definitely, I'd agree.
Similar question to yourself. I mean, allowing for that, and we'll talk a bit more about the structure and the way in which you have this theme of duality. You have the relationship between Picard and Guinan. You have arguably the relationship between Rachel Garrett, the first effective series captain of the Enterprise, long before Janeway took over that particular role. We obviously have the relationship between Tashi Yar and Richard Castillo, and arguably the relationship on a geopolitical sense between the Klingons and the Federation, whether that be Russia, America, or whatever your views, and so on. What are your own thoughts, Kathy? Having sort of heard some of Larry's insight in terms of how this was being produced?
Well, I think kind of very similar to Jessica, but I was just really impressed by the writing altogether. So to hear that there was so much chaos to go with the writing, it was like, that sounds right. I feel like my best work is definitely under pressure. But the whole time I watched it, it was just so well executed, like even to the last line, like the sitting down. And I was like, how did everything have its like place? Like, it's crazy too, because last week when we were talking about the time tunnel, yes, that seemed like crazy writing to me. Like, I did not like the Alamo concept. I liked the theme. I liked the idea of time travel, and I liked the concept of it, but the specific story they were trying to sell me on, I was like, no. Whereas this one, I completely was like, I'm invested. I'm in. I need to know if people are. And of course, I bet everyone fell in love with Richard Castillo when they watched this. Who didn't? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're a monster if you didn't. so that's how I feel. It's the writing. The writing is a huge difference.
Clearly, last week, of course, Jessica and myself managed to actually fly the flag for some of Irwin Allen's routines and were a bit more sympathetic to the fun aspect of that, although I do hear exactly what you've been saying there. Let's talk characters in terms of that. I've already talked about some of the duality, and you mentioned, obviously, Lieutenant Castillo, played by Christopher McDonald, and, of course, Tasha Yar, who returned after a fairly ignominious episode at the end of season one, where an oil slick effectively did for her to a certain extent, or was it just the personification of evil called Armus? I mean, Larry, were there characters that stood out, or did you feel that kind of interaction kind of worked? And before you answer, there is one little gripe that I do have, given that we're in that alternate timeline structure, and it was Picard's shock when Guinan said there were children on the Enterprise. Allowing for that, what the heck was Wesley Crusher doing on the bridge?
Well, he was obviously a special case, as he was all through his life in any dimension. Come on, Alex. This is traveler material we're talking about.
This is
here
true.
Now,
this is true.
Know.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
Come on, it was. Yeah, they used to say, "Oh, he's a prodigy, like he's a Mozart, like prodigy," and that was supposed to, you know, there's one in every thousand or whatever, one in a million. But to me, this episode, it's like I remember it generically just being powerful and showing, you know, what could be done with the Next Generation episode hour, 44 minutes, whatever. But at the same time, the story, what I just rattled off there, is what is always gets me about yesterday's Enterprise. And sometimes it's almost, to me, on my side of things, to hear you two listen talk about the characters and all, it's like, oh, that's right. It's partly we care about the drama of the production because it turned out so well. And to stop and look at this and all that they introduced, I mean, it's a springboard from the known universe, like any, you know, whether it's a mirror universe or anything. The shorthand is that we know where we were. Now we're looking for the contrasts and we're looking for the differences. So whether that's saying, you know, military log instead of captain's log, or whether it's having a combat date instead of a star date, or having the, you know, everybody wearing sidearms instead of not, those little things like that. But then seeing, and then you're into the story. And even with the time vortex effect, Worf goes away. So Worf is not by any means part of their crew now. And just seeing the little subtle things they did very cheaply to change the uniforms, like the cuffs, which they, you know, the last scene very famously has the blooper of real-time Prime Universe Geordi still wearing military cuffs when he's having that scene with Guinan, which I remember going, wait a minute, was he wearing, what is that supposed to mean? It was a total blooper. But it's amazing. Yeah, you introduce Castillo, you introduce the relationship between, you know, their Tasha and a time travel Castillo, but also, yes, Rachel Garrett and having a female captain before Janeway and knowing that that was part of history and what they were able to do with those characters in the drama of the moment, but how you felt for them and how you were able to have a relationship between Tasha and Castillo in just that short amount of time that makes sense. And the emotions and seeing Guinan play Universal Guinan. She's Guinan in any universe. You know, it's amazing what they're able to do, given the chaos, the writing, yes. But even on a calm week, if they'd had 6 months to write this, watching those characters and how they were so effective with people. And And another backstory is, you know, Denise Crosby realized very quickly that she made a mistake by asking to be let out because she thought they would never be able to devote time individually to the characters with that main the cast. And eventually they did. And so not to look like a mea culpa too much, but she just kind of let it be known, oh gosh, it would be great to have Atasha somehow, you know, return, time travel or whatever. And so the fact that they combine Tasha's return in with a time travel story, and it's another Enterprise, which was part of this too. If the Enterprises are a character we knew about, we don't know about the B yet. It's on the wall. They know they, you got a false sense of history seeing all those Enterprises on the, in the conference lounge, the observation lounge wall, famously the gold ships, the original little ships. But, the fact that they just could go to that and conjure up that history and give you a little, you know, and then say it was a pivotal part of history. And even in the prime timeline, that this event coming to the rescue of a ship under attack, of Klingons under attack, that it, it played into even the prime universe's history of Klingon and Federation relations. So anyway, there is so much packed in here, including treating the Enterprise as a C as a character, that it was just, it's just amazing again, that they packed so much. And then it wasn't all just for show, that there's really emotional resonance in those characters, and that it followed to the point where people saw, wow, we did make a mistake getting rid of Denise and Tasha. How else can we bring her back? And even setting the stage for the whole Sela subplot, which is confusing enough on its own later on.
Yes, I was conscious we didn't actually explain for the non-Trek followers that, of course, Sarek that we referred to earlier is the father of Spock. Clearly there was an impact in terms of Surak, the founder of Vulcan philosophy. So I feel that could actually still maybe emerge in some way, shape or form. Okay, let's talk characters. Trisha O'Neill's incarnation of Rachel Garrett, I thought, was spot on. Again, an unfortunate ending with a head injury doing for her. I mean, she obviously escaped the first thing and then she went after that. However, in fact, curiously, I think she would have made it would have been nice to have seen her revisit the character in some ways, and still might in certain aspects. David Carson, of course, English director, would go on to direct Generations. So clearly that line through with Whoopi Goldberg and the Elorians and kind of resonated.
Yes, I was going to say they stepped him up. He did such a great job. But see, there again, this had such cinema scope for what they were able to do in 44 minutes on the budget. They let him direct the DS9 pilot Emissary. So it was like stepping stones to give him more to see what he did with that. And then Generations was kind of the prize of that whole ladder that he was climbing.
And indeed, we did review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Emissary back in time, and it was given a startlingly wonderful thing. But let's talk characters. Kathy, your favorite character, is it Guinan, or are you going to go somewhat left field with honorable mentions?
Well, I obviously have to say my honorable mention. Like, it's not my first rodeo. It's silly. First of all, I did want to make a comment about the female captain. My comment of, damn, they did her dirty, that was to her death. I was, to see the blood really affected me. I wasn't ready. Okay. And then, you know, because Picard is such an iconic character, right? Even if you don't know the Star Trek, you know Picard, like it's unavoidable. And it was the moment I saw Picard not allow his ship go down and he jumped behind to get control. And I was like, I get it. I really get Picard. I understand why everyone's on board with Picard this moment right here. So that's my honorable mention. And I think I revealed already that it's definitely Castillo is my favorite character. I just read him well. I just got it. It made sense.
Because of the Latin background, no doubt.
I did think of that. I was like, I got questions here because, like, I don't think that actor is Latin. So, but I'm not here to fight it. Latin representation, come on through. But no, that wasn't my reason. I just like that his character is important, but not so. But is still very much a side character. You know, he's still very much involved with the plot and everything like that. But it just shows how well you can do with the role, even when it isn't the major focus. You know, and I thought he just did a really good job being exactly what that character needed to be.
Okay. Jessica, thoughts from yourself in terms of characters?
I actually agree that Rachel Garrett was my favorite character, which became a little tragic, but I think she, but I think she had such an air about her. Like she had this like this authority, but was so composed. It was, I think that Star Trek has always done very well in having women in very strong roles, which I think, because a lot of times when we watch older shows, we usually have to have the caveat of like, oh, it was of its time a little bit with how it showed women. But Star Trek is always impressive in that regard, I think. And I think Rachel's also a very great example of that. She was fantastic. It's sad, but fantastic.
Yes, as we mentioned last week, of course, the time tunnel with Lee Merriweather, who would, of course, appear in Star Trek in one of the original series episodes. Perhaps Anne McGregor, not quite at the same standing as some of the representation we see in Star Trek, nor indeed was Elizabeth Palmer, of course, or Lieutenant Palmer, who was also featured in the same episode of the time tunnel. Larry, yourself, can you choose a favorite character? Is the one that stands out as, yeah, I'll go for this one.
Wow. I don't know. I love all the guests. I mean, all the new guest characters. I guess somewhere between Rachel Garrett, the captain, and Castillo. And it's hard to think of Denise and Tasha Yar as a new character, but in this as a guest character. But in this case, it was kind of the talk you said the Denise, the Tasha Yar comeback. So it could have easily not been as powerful. So, and I don't want to discredit her for that. So no, I just feel like the entire impact. In fact, just want to point out here to modernize this, one of the little plot points of this season, Picard, and if you haven't seen it, this won't spoil it, is there's a nod, there's a mention of Rachel Garrett, even in this Picard season, where there's a statue of her, and it's a little plot point along the way. And it's a little Easter egg. If you're watching the Picard and you know Rachel Garrett, then it's ooh. And if you don't, then it has nothing to do with it. It doesn't slow you down. But just to show you the impact of that, still lingering to this day. And the fact, and I again, this is so funny, but I'm a big on underdogs and looking out for them as characters and as concepts. And to this day, people say, "What's your favorite Enterprise?" If it's that nerdy circle. And I'll still say the Enterprise C because it's like, I want to see more. We never see, yay, Ambassador class. We never see that. It had this one moment in history that we saw on film, and I'd like to see more of that. So, anyway.
And of course, the iconic phrase, "Let's ensure that history never forgets the name Enterprise," delivered in his unique Shakespearean manner by Patrick Stewart. We talked about the cinematic nature, of course, of the 44 minutes. And again, it's interesting. We moved, obviously, because of the onset of greater commercial time in 1980s TV. Gone were the days of 50-minute broadcasts, 52 minutes. We're down to 44 minutes. And it's obviously pre-streaming from that perspective, so you don't have the luxury of opening up on that side of things. But Dennis McCarthy's music, I think, again, really sets a real epic tone for this, which works very well and is woven in from the onset of duality through the Klingon aspect. Again, I think it works very well. And again, as you reveal, Larry, the fact that they were under such pressure to actually produce this in the whole sort of system was, again, hats off to the production team. And it still obviously connects from that perspective. But
And they
what
had to do
are
a
us.
vortex. They had to do a vortex and do that. They actually had a little bit of combat. They had to, so visual effect in the middle of a season, visual effects had to really, but this is one of the shows that everybody wanted to do great on. And if they put in 18-hour days or 20-hour days, they just did it.
Because initially I thought it's a ship in a bottle show, but it's more than that, isn't it? We can't simply say it's just using a small cast with very few insert guests, etc. It kind of had more connection than that, and does have that epic nature, which is probably only matched by Balance of Terror, possibly in the original series. But that's another issue entirely. Let's talk scores then. Kathy, what's your score for yesterday's Enterprise?
I think the number that's coming out for me right now is, who am I? I've only complimented it, and if I can honestly say that there was something wrong, I can't think of it. It's a 10.
Wow. There we are. Jessica?
So originally I was gonna say 9, specifically because I'm biased, because and Alex knows this, time travel is not my thing, but hearing how much of an impression it actually made when it first came out, has changed my mind. I think that's very nice to know, and I'm glad that I was able to find that out about this episode. So it's a 10.
I was also on a 9, partly because of the Wesley Crusher question, but I think Larry capably actually answered that. So, yeah, what the hey? I'll go 10 as well in terms of Child Prodigy. And I've forgotten, of course, about the wonderment of the Traveler, and of course the cosmic aspect of that, and the Child Prodigy element, which I think, yeah, I can probably buy into that as well. So, Larry, are you going to actually say no? I'm going to go for 5.
No. Well, I mean, even when I love an episode on your scale system here, I don't care what it is. I never go all the way to a 10 because I just think nothing is ever perfect. But this is the one.
Larry,
I love.
That was me too. I was also that. But
I might
where are
say
the
9.5, but you're
Where are the
sitting here.
flaws?
I'm not going to knock him for the little blooper at the end with the cuffs. No, no,
If
no.
anything, that gave them a point.
Okay. No, I will say this is. I just go back to and not that you want to live in your nostalgia and like, this is what I thought in 1990 and it's how I'll always look at it. It's like, no, it's, and listening to you two just reinforces that for me. So no, this is one time I'm doing a 10, Alex, because
No.
if this doesn't deserve a 10, I don't know what does. Even with context, even watching it fresh today, it's a 10.
There we are, absolutely unique. And of course, people can still get hold of the book, which is literally just by your side, as I see. They're just underneath Star Trek Voyager, of course, the go-to. I noticed you're using the later edition and not the original edition of Star Trek Next Generation Companion.
Well, it's just the one I had on display because it's got everything in it. But yeah, the blue edition is what a lot of people had, and then the red, the red one. But
Or both.
yesterday's Enterprise was in all three, since it was.
Yes,
This is just their
exactly.
third season. This is the year that everything. Can I throw one more little detail at you, real quick? For this talk about the CinemaScope, Ron Moore, it was his act where everyone died at the end, originally, and he originally wrote a death for everybody, but they had to cut them back for time. So, the crew going down, the alternate crew, he had what is it? Data being electrocuted, Wesley's head being blown off. Anyway, but you only saw it.
Fan favorite. It would have been a fan
But you,
favorite, let's face it. Sorry,
but they, I
Will
mean, they were
Wheaton,
all
but it
going
would
to
have.
die heroically. So he was trying to give everybody a huge, spectacular death. But they only, aside from Rachel Garrett's, I think Riker is the only one you see actually die. Yeah. But anyway,
Well,
everybody had a death. That was part of the charm of the episode. Well,
and
how come they get to die on Cameron? I don't.
classic actors quandary, but still, never mind. It's the battle between the actor and the director. I will say that actually, just looking up to up stream, shall we say, Star Trek Picard, which, as you mentioned, the Rachel Garrett thing there, has wrapped up with me with 2 10s, both final episodes 9 and 10 of Picard. Definitely 2 10s, for reasons which will become clear as we pass through time and all sorts of other areas. So it was wonderful to see that perhaps Terry Matalas finally actually understands Trek and has been a huge asset as a contributor to that. But that's for another talk for another time. Next week on Resonance Rewind, well, we'll be back in the world of Super Mario Nation when Kathy is actually off to Ukraine again to do her work for good and spreading the world of Trek to a whole new world, probably being as heroic, hopefully not having the same end as Rachel Garrett, but being as heroic as Rachel Garrett. And certainly Tasha Yar, she goes in a delivery of humanitarian aid to the Ukraine. Jessica and others will hopefully be joining me for, yes, WIN, the World Intelligence Network. It's Joe McLean, the 9-year-old boy who has a whole series of brain patterns. Indeed, in this episode, not one but two brain patterns focused on him, as Colonel McLean actually has to deal with a whole dangerous journey across part of the world, which of course means that Resonance Rewind will be exploring Joe 90. To Larry Nemechek, to Jessica Burtis, to Kathy Manso, huge thanks as ever. And as ever, keep on resonating. Or as you like to say, Larry, you have the final word here in your classic outro. It is.
Track well, everybody.
Thank you. Yes, Lieutenant.
Captain, I request a transfer to the Enterprise C.
For what reason?
They need someone at Tactical.
We need you here.
I'm not supposed to be here, sir.
Sit down, Lieutenant. What did she say to you?
I don't belong here, sir. I'm supposed to be dead.
She felt it necessary to reveal that to you.
I felt it was necessary.
I see. You realize that it is very possible the Enterprise C will fail. We will continue in this timeline, in which case your life, hopefully, will continue for a long while.
I know how important it is that they don't fail, Captain. That's why I'm requesting this transfer.
You don't belong on that ship, Lieutenant.
No, Captain Garrett belongs on that ship. But she's dead. And I think there's a certain logic in this request.
There's no logic in this at all. Whether they succeed or not. Enterprise C will be destroyed.
But, Captain, at least with someone at Tactical, they will have a chance to defend themselves well. It may be a matter of seconds or minutes, but those could be the minutes that change history. Guinan says I died a senseless death in the other timeline. I didn't like the sound of that, Captain. I've always known the risks that come with a Starfleet uniform. If I'm to die in one, I'd like my death to count for something.
Lieutenant. Permission granted.
Thank you, sir.
Military log supplemental. Lieutenant Tasha Yar has transferred to the Enterprise C, where she has taken over tactical duties. Meanwhile, our long-range scanners have picked up Klingon battle cruisers on an intercept course.
Number and type of ships, Mr. Crusher?
3 Cavort-class battlecruisers, sir.
They're not even troubling to cloak themselves.
I shouldn't be so confident after the pasting we gave them on Archer 4.
Attention, all hands. As you know, we could outrun the Klingon vessels, but we must protect the Enterprise C until she enters the temporal rift. And we must succeed. Let's make sure that history never forgets the name. Enterprise. Guard out. Mr. Data.
Shields are holding, sir.
Hold fire. Mr. Crusher, come about to course 148003.
Aye, sir.
Photon torpedoes ready.
Dispersal pattern, Sierra. And fire.
One enemy target hit, sir. Moderate damage to their forward shields. Our shields are still holding. Minor damage to secondary hull.
Course 148. Correction. Course 170. Mark 014.
Sir, one of the ships is breaking off and going towards the Enterprise C.
Mr. Crusher, keep us within 200 kilometers of the Enterprise C.
Coming to 217, mark 115, increasing to 2/3 impulse.
Damage control teams, deck 14.
Engineering the bridge. Starboard power coupling is down. Containment field generator 3 is damaged. Attempting the bypass.
If we lose antimatter containment...
Acknowledge, LaForge.
Sir, the Klingons are flanking us, attempting to draw us away from the Enterprise C.
Hold course, Mr. Crusher. Continual fire all phases.
One enemy target destroyed, sir.
Damage report.
Heavy casualty in the secondary hull. Navigational sensor array inoperative.
Antimatter containment fields are failing. If I can't stabilize them, I'll have to dump the reactor core. She'll blow.
Shields buckling, Captain. They will not.
The force of bridge. I can't hold the antimatter containment fields. Initiating emergency shutdown. Can't shut it down. I estimate 2 minutes to a warp core breach. Go, 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 go!
How long before the Enterprise C enters the rift?
52 seconds, sir.
All remaining power to the defense systems.
Power coupling severed in forward phaser banks. Attempting to bypass. Controls not responding.
Federation ship Enterprise, surrender and prepare to be boarded.
That will be the day.